Welcome to Supertatis for Parshas Ekev, recorded on the road this week on a road trip with my family. So this is not live, but it is dedicated for the Refuah Shleima of Moshe ben Rachelmina, Eliana Malka bas Basi Rachel, and for Yosef David ben Rachel Bela. The stories this week, the first one, we have a story about the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer is known to have given shir for about 45 straight years weekly, and he did it with a lot of hasmada, and shir lasted a very, very long time, several hours. And the way that the procedure went is that every day his wife would give him a cookie in case he got weak in the middle of shir. Not that he was really too into the cookie, but if he needed to get his blood sugar up and have a little bit of strength to be able to continue on with the shir, he had the cookie available for him and would just sit there on a plate usually. So normally the Chassam Sofer wouldn't need it and wouldn't eat it, but it was always there from the Rebbetzin to be there for him in case he did indeed need it. One day there was a little bit of a twist that he was going fine, but unfortunately his gabbai got a little bit sick or a little bit hungry, a little bit lightheaded, whatever it was, and the gabbai ate the cookie. And the funny part of what had happened is that all of a sudden, Chassam Sofer also got a little bit hungry. And he looked towards his plate, and his plate was empty. And he looked at the gabbai, and the gabbai said, he said to the gabbai, where's my cookie? So the gabbai was a little bit flabbergasted. He let out what he thought was a white lie. And he said, the Rav ate the cookie. That wasn't the truth, but he lied, and the Chassam Sofer responded in a way that's really quite remarkable. He said, look, the truth is, it is quite possible that I wouldn't remember whether or not I ate the cookie. The cookie doesn't matter to me, but if I said a berei mezeh mezonos and I didn't say a bracha achrona, that's something I would remember. So just remember, it reminds us, I was learning the Orchot Tzadikim recently talking about forgetting things. So we need to do tachbulos, so we don't, if we have a forgetful nature, we need to do tachbulos to try to remember things. I've suggested to people I know who occasionally forget things for whatever reason, find some method to remember to say a bracha achrona, move a bracelet, move a ring from one finger to another, move a watch, whatever it is, so you know that once you put food in your mouth, you should be able to express a proper bracha achrona to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's a story about Rav Yaakov Emden, about a certain chashuv rav who had a kehila. And Baruch Hashem, the kehila was very, very makpid on their minhagim. This is, that's a beautiful thing. It's the preservation of the minhagi Yisrael is extraordinarily important. Unfortunately, it wasn't balanced. Sometimes people hold on to something and they let loose on other things and it didn't work out. They were actually over several Isurei Torah. And he made a comment, I think, that is important for us to think. He said, well, it's a real shame that the Aseres HaDibros weren't written down as the Aseres Minhagim, because if they were, maybe they'd be a little bit more observant. I once heard the same thing, unfortunately, that I heard a friend of mine said the same thing about if the Aseres HaDibros was known as the Aseres Skulos, it probably would be a little bit better complied with. Obviously, the humor is dark humor, and we all need to express and find ways to show our fidelity to halacha in the same sort of same sort of vibrant manner. Third story is a story about the stipler and Rav Chaim Kanievsky. The stipler heard from his wife. She came to me. She said, "Oh, Chaim's sick. Chaim's sick." So the stipler, you knew that Rav Chaim Kanievsky was very, very insistent on learning, and he would even learn to his own physical detriment. So he went over to Rav Chaim, and he said, "Listen, I know it's going to be hard, but you're not going to Kollel today. I want you to go lay in the bed." He told the Rebbetzin, "You got to, prepare this sort of medical treatment for him. But the Zanim, he's got to chill out and lay in the bed today. You are not going to Kollel. So, you know, they obviously complied. It was Kiburav, and they needed to do what they needed to do. So even though every moment was precious to him, he listened to his father, and the Rebbetzin did what she was supposed to do as well, and the stipler came home. You know, it was a little bit stymieing because he said, "Nu, how are you doing today?" I forgot this part of the story. He asked Chaim, "How are you?" He said, "Good, Baruch Hashem. Good, no problem." He said, "Okay." He said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah, Baruch Hashem." He said, "Okay, you still need to do this." "Okay, fine." So he went home, and he said to the Rebbetzin, he got home, he said, "I got to help. I helped Chaim. You know, he wouldn't take care of himself." He said he was feeling a little bit better, but, you know, whatever. And the Rebbetzin said, I just heard from Chaim, you know, and he seemed to be, you know, whatever. He said, "Wait a minute, which one of Chaim did you go to?" He said, "I went to our son." He said, "Oh, I was talking about a different Chaim. Chaim are, you know, this relative." "Oh." And the stipler put on his coat and he went right back out. And he said, and she said, "Well, where are you going?" She said, "I went to Chaim Kanievsky." And Chaim Kanievsky, I'm sure, is just being Mekayim Kibud Av. And even though he had no idea what I was talking about, telling him he was sick, and he had no idea that, you know, I was completely mistaken. He was just doing what I was supposed to do, and he would waste a whole day of learning just to follow the mitzvah of his father. So it's a great story about Kibud Av. Obviously, that is extraordinary in every respect. But the way that we interact with our parents and the level of deference without any pushback is certainly something which is quite admirable. On to Divrei Torah. I'm going to start with a Sforno on V'limadatem Osamas B'neichem. And Sforno has an interesting comment. He says, Hirgilu es b'neichem le'mitzvos. So, Hergel to mitzvos sounds like the mitzvah of chinuch to me, but historically, the mitzvah of chinuch, is that not a derabbanan? So Rav Chaim Elazri, the Chacham from Canton, Ohio, gives two answers. The first one is based on Rabbi Cheskel Sarna. He says, you know, it could be that chinuch has a deraisa aspect when it comes to issues like emuna, whereas just the hergel to mitzvos is derabbanan. And two, maybe when it comes to banim gedolim, older children, it's deraisa, but when it comes to banim ketanim, it's derabbanan. Or he gives a third possibility that maybe it's referring to tami mitzvos, which could have a greater chinuch aspect with respect to hergel, getting people used to things, than perhaps others. Now on to a couple questions. This week we have two kashas that are on Rashi's. So the first one is, we have kind of what seems like a stira with respect to animals when we go into Eretz Yisrael. So it says, in describing the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, we're told that Hashem is going to drive the nations out slowly, pentir be'alach achayas asada. So Rashi asks, why should we be concerned about wild animals when we're fulfilling Ratzon Hashem, since we're told that the animals of the field are going to end up being our allies if we follow Hashem's will, right? That should sound familiar. So Rashi quotes a medrash to say that it was known, she'asidim lichto, that the Jewish people were going to sin, and therefore they would not merit from this bris that Hashem gave. Later, though, we see in Parshas Mishpatim also it records a similar description of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, with a similar covenant that Hashem will not remove the nations that are currently quick there. Pen yirbe'alach achayas hasada, they're going to be plentiful. Surprisingly, Rashi doesn't mention his concern that the animals will not injure us, though, if we're following Hashem's will. Why does he comment in Parshas Ekev, but is silent in Mishpatim? So the first approach is Parshas Ekev is written to emphasize a Jew's free will, his bechira, despite the fact that Hashem knows things. So Maskela David says that Ekev begins the word with the word pen, lest, to dispel the erroneous belief that the Jewish people are predetermined to be subject to wild animals regardless of their actions. Hashem's knowledge of the future does not control the future, and a Jew can choose between Tov and Ra, as noted in the Rambam. Mentioning the wild animals is a possibility, but not a necessity, and it emphasizes that wild animals will result because of the Jewish people's bechira. Moreover, it was completely unnecessary to mention future sins in Mishpatim because Rashi acknowledges that the Jews will sin in the future in that same parsha. The Nachlas Yaakov notes similarly that in Ekev, the Jews cannot depend on their own merits and would have to rely on Hashem's Nisim. That's the emphasis there. So that's the first approach. The second approach is that both parshios focus on different aspects of the conquest. So the Sifsei Chachamim suggests that in Mishpatim, the cause for the extra animals is that the land is desolate, unlike in Parshas Ekev, when we say being the land is desolate is not mentioned. Therefore, Rashi has to explain why the animals would come. So now, let's move on to one other question. We learned that Hashem was angry, Uva Aron Hisanaf, with Aron, and Rashi explains that he was punished with the death of his sons, Nadav and Avihu, as a result of the Egel Azav. However, Rashi in Sefer Vayikra cites two opinions where Nadav and Avihu died, either for paskin halacha in front of their Rebbe, or for entering the Mikdash when they were inebriated, both as a result of their own actions. And according to Rashi, did not of an Avihu die resulting from their own actions or their father's actions? So the approaches. Number one is the sons died because of Aaron's actions. And Maharsha says that none of an Avihu died on account of their own actions. But the method, i.e. being consumed by fire, happened on account of their own actions. This punishment relates to paskening halacha in front of their master, as ruling in halacha relates to heavenly fire. Approach number two is no, they really died for their own maisim. Ayelas HaShachar, Rav Steinman, argues that everything from Hashem is very measured. Therefore, even the ancillary pain that results from another individual's punishment is also measured. So Nadav and Avihu died as a result of their own actions. And Rashi in Vayikra relates to that casualty. However, Aaron also earned his own pain as a result of Nadav and Avihu's death, and the tsar that resulted from Aaron's involvement in the Egel Hazav was what was the gorim here. Alternatively, Steinman also argues that notwithstanding the fact that Nadav and Avihu merited their own punishment, they could have been saved based on the merits of their father. However, since Aaron was involved in the Egel Hazav, he could not provide them with the merit that would save them. So a further thought, Rashi says that Nadav and Avihu were punished due to Aaron's involvement with the Egel Azav. However, we're told that children are not punished due to the sins of their fathers, right? So how exactly they're not going to be punished with death. So how can we be miyashiv that particular issue? Thank you for learning with me.